The Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
All right, we're back here for another episode of Midwest Swing. You can find us on Twitter at Midwest Swing Pod. We're part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network, which you can find on Twitter at Cold Omaha MN. If you are a Cold Omaha fan, please go to coldomaha.com/Amazon. Your Amazon experience doesn't change. You can shop Amazon Prime, Amazon Pantry, any of the Amazon options that you're already using, and we get a little bit of a kickback so you can support the podcast network and all the great written and video content that appears on coldomaha.com. Anyway, you are listening to Midwest Swing. I am your host, Brandon Warren. You can find me on Twitter at Brandon_Warren. In the producer's chair across from me today is Tom Schreier, co-founder of coldomaha.com. You can find him on Twitter at tschreier3.
Yep.
Just coming off a really great and rowdy Cold Omaha editorial meeting, Tom.
Gets out of hand.
It does. And so I don't get surprised when people fall off the phone call because we start discussing all kinds of stuff. But
yeah,
not to belabor the point, Tom, how are you doing today?
Doing well. How are you?
Not too bad. Braved the elements to get here, and so did our guest for this week. It's been a minute since we've had him on here. He's here in the flesh, repping the Florida Gators on the sweatshirt today, is Mike Berardino of the Pioneer Press Twins Beat Reporter. Mike, how are we doing today?
I'm doing well. I'm sorry I'm late.
No, it's good. Actually, you got here just as the meeting was ending, and so it's all good.
Cool.
Yeah. Kind of a lot of things have gone on since we've been here last. We did go over, I believe, your Hall of Fame ballot the last time we chatted.
You sure did.
Had a couple of shows since then. I've been out of town. In fact, last week you had Rob Nyer on late in the week. Back on track here with a Tuesday show, which is good. I really enjoy staying on a schedule. It's good for the listeners and all that as well. But one of the first moves that we'll break down, maybe not surprising on the front end, the back end maybe a little more surprising, the signing of Matt Belisle. And for me, part of this offseason, and I think that the Belisle move kind of agrees with that, is that you wouldn't necessarily feel like there's a different brain trust at play here. Matt Belisle is the kind of reliever Terry Ryan would have signed, don't you think?
Well, yes and no. I mean, the pitch to contact, I suppose, the lack of missing bats. You could see the veteran guy, known quantity, track record.
Yeah, all those buzzwords.
But here's the thing about Matt Belisle that that jumps out at me is, you know, it really surprised me. I guess I should have known this going in, but he's a very much, as I noted on Twitter, a reverse split guy. At least he was last year. Mm-hmm. Something changed last year because he wasn't in 15. And so I contrasted the his ability against lefties from 15 to 16, and both years had pretty good raw numbers. He just has a hard time staying on the field. He had hamstring or calf injuries.
Yeah, it cost
stuff.
Him like a big chunk of last
Basically,
year.
Basically, he's pitched to 74 games total the past 2 years.
That's like a Ryan Pressly one-year workload.
Yeah, and this guy, the previous 5 years, I believe, had averaged about 75, right at 74 outings during a span mostly with the Rockies. So you explain this to me. In 2015 with the Cardinals, left-handers against Matt Belisle, who is right-handed, mm-hmm. They reached base at a 389 clip, and then last year it dropped to 190. Now, I realize that the first year, 15, it was 56 plate appearances. Last year, 79. But that's not a terribly small number for a right-hander who's only pitching about half the year. So mm-hmm. Something really changed. Also, the gap between what righties did against him versus lefties really changed, at least batting average-wise. But yeah, I mean, it's in 15, righties reached base at 333 clip, and lefties hit 389 or reached 389 OBP. And then last year it was 340 for right-handers, still not good, but 190 for lefties. So he really became, last year at least, in a way, a situational weapon against lefties. And on a market where we've seen what situational lefties get, to spin the ball generally from the left side.
$6.5 million for Jerry Blevins and Boone Logan.
Yeah, this was an interesting counterplay. So in that regard, I think that this is an indication of the new leadership, and obviously they have a lot of the same scouting voices there. And again, don't forget, Wayne Krivsky was the GM in Cincinnati when Matt Belisle was converting to the bullpen and making it work.
The nice thing, too, is they won't have to rely on him as a featured lefty specialist in the sense that they'll have Taylor Rogers and then probably one of Ryan O'Rourke or Buddy Beauchers who can both get lefties out. So whatever he gives you against lefties, if he reverts to his old self, it's not really going to hurt them either. You know, whatever he gives them should be beneficial based on his track record. Even if he doesn't replicate his ERA from last year, he should be helpful. Now, you break down his pitch mix. Fewer fastballs last year than he had basically at any point. More sliders. Not appreciably more sliders. Not much in the way of changeups. He's basically a fastball, curveball, slider guy. But he's gotten more slider heavy the older he's gotten, which I suppose in some respects makes sense if your fastball starts slowing down on you a little bit. But he's never been a big fastball guy either. You're talking low 90s, 90, 92 with a good slider. You know, maybe it's the slider. It's putting it under the lefty's hands. I'd have to break it down and see if he got a lot of grounders off righties too, or lefties, excuse me. Because if you're putting it under their hands and jamming them, ground balls, you know, he's a ground ball guy. I think he's 40-some-odd percent, but he's over the league average. I love ground ball guys in the bullpen. They're safer. The outfield defense is going to be better this year. But that, you know, the Adrianza move that we'll talk about here in a little while too improves that infield defense for in the later innings when they might be using a guy like Belial. You know, maybe they put him in for Polanco in the 7th inning, 8th inning. I think there are layers at play here that maybe is more than just proven righty, proven veteran, late 30s. There's going to be some utility here from him.
Well, yeah, he doesn't miss a lot of bats with a fastball, but I jotted down last year his swinging strike rate on the slider was 12.9% through 202
Can't
sliders.
Can't shake a fist at that.
You'll take
good.
That. And I think it's the cutter that he featured more last year, and that obviously a great cutter can jam lefties, but somehow he got a 13.6% swinging strike rate on the cutter. That's the cutter.
So it's a short slider, basically.
Maybe, and so he'll have to explain that to us when we see him down there in a few days. But he only threw 66 cutters last year, but that's pretty good. That must be an Invisa cutter if he's if he's getting that kind of strikeout or swinging strike rate. So he can miss bats. He just doesn't necessarily miss them for strikeouts because his career strikeout rate is pretty modest, especially in relief. The thing that you hear, too, and Tracy Ringlesby, Hall of Fame writer, now with MLB.com, but a guy I've known forever, a great mentor to many of us in this business on this side, he covered Belial with those Rockies teams, and he took it upon himself after that signing to say, you know, one of the best most accountable people that he'd ever covered, and Michael Kadire, I think would have crossed over with Belial too. So there's a little of that. So
yep.
And LaTroy, I believe, was right on that team. So Matt Belial's been around is the point. They were looking for that at $2 million. It's not breaking the bank. The thing that people immediately questioned, of course, I'll segue for you, is that you sign Matt Belial, and then sets off a chain reaction on the 40-man where you end up designating Byung-ho Park.
Yeah, it's a bottleneck there, and then it also might bump someone out of the bullpen, whether it's Michael Tonkin, JT Chagua, you know, a number of guys who might otherwise have gotten a chance. I do want to stick with Belial for just a second here. How much stock do you put in the fact that because he pitched pretty well at Coors, you know, there's a guy who knows how to pitch. He can adapt. He can do whatever it takes in a given scenario. I think you have to give some credence to the fact that guys who pitch well at Coors get the deal. I mean, you know, not to put it as in too simple of terms, but there are guys who just know how to pitch. Again, you probably don't get to be 36, 37 years old, you know, LaTroy Hawkins 2.0 pitching into your late 30s without knowing how to pitch. But I think there is that it factor with Belial that maybe might have endeared him more than some of the other righties on the market at this price point.
That may be. You know, the fact, too, that he could be a mentor to younger starters even, because when the Braves took him in the second round, he was consistently one of their top prospects and seemed to have all the pitches to be a top-line starter. And he ended up being traded to the Reds in the Kent Merker trade that brought Merker back to the Braves. And it just didn't work out for Belial in Cincinnati, you know, because that's another tough place to pitch. That's a very home run friendly park that the Reds play in. So it'll be interesting. I think Washington's more fair, equitable for both sides, and St. Louis the same. But And Target Fields kind of morphed into that. So there, but he, he's got some stories to tell. And the Twins, you know, Falvey and Levine were out front all winter saying that they would like to. One of the first questions I had for them is how they viewed their bullpen needs. And they were saying that they would probably at some point sign a person or two, veteran type, that people might even say. I think Thad said it this way. People would say, well, why are they doing that? And it would be, in part, the component would be that veteran leader and trusted, you know, voice for those guys, the younger guys in a bullpen that still has some real upside with guys who haven't done it yet but should be able to.
I think Vogelsang falls along that line, too.
Yes.
In fact, and we'll talk about the 25-man roster that I've – my first projection, which is it's just all in good fun. I think I have Vogelsang as my long guy, and so more of a swingman role where he could start – relieve based on where Phil Hughes is in his recovery, what they want to do with Jose Berríos, if they decide that Justin Haley's going to make the team. It's nice to have a guy maneuverable in the sense that, you know, obviously Vogelsang you couldn't send back down in the middle of the year due to options and everything. But when you sign him on a minor league deal, you've got a little more leeway in that situation. Now, I'm going to invoke a name that's not very popular, and you can call me out on it if you don't like it. But to me, the procedure here isn't entirely different than Tim Stauffer. And I know people hated Tim Stauffer because he pitched so poorly, but Stauffer had fairly good numbers coming from the Padres. Now, with WAR especially, I feel like they punished Petco pitchers a little bit too much. A guy could have a 3.2 ERA, a strikeout per inning, and WAR would be like minus 0.5. And you're like, wait a second, what happened here? And then it's, you know, the park factors, and so you're expected to have a 2.75 ERA to be a decent reliever at Petco Park. And what I liked what you had said was on the along the lines of guys numbers against, you know, batting lines against. Sometimes an ERA or a Ks per nine can lie to you, and a line against might tell you, you know, did this guy give up a lot of on base percentage or slugging percentage that he maybe was able to hide behind otherwise. That's where Stauffer kind of takes a hit. You know, he had really nice numbers that last year in San Diego. Strikeout per inning, 3-point-some-odd ERA, pretty good walk numbers. I believe he was a ground ball guy as well. But then you look, and he's given like a 740 OPS to both sides, and you're like, okay, well, maybe he's not a star, but he should be a decent reliever, and then he just fell apart. I worry that if Belisle doesn't come out of the gate strong, whether it's due to aging, changing leagues, this guy's never pitched in the American League. Again, NL relievers face pinch hitters, so it's not an apples-to-apples comparison. But if he comes out and isn't very good, I feel like people are going to light their Tim Stauffer torches when, in fact, Belisle and even Stauffer at that time deserved better.
Tim Stauffer is a tough sell on the people.
People start hissing and spitting split pea soup,
yeah,
and their heads start spinning around.
That did, that
you
did not
want to bring up Tim that, Stauffer.
Yeah, that did not go well. He was accountable. There was certainly that, and
but
you know,
the process made the
you he know, made about. I believe the guarantee was right about the same.
But
too.
Trust the process, right? The process was right. It's like when you bunt and it goes right, but somebody says you shouldn't have bunted there.
Yeah.
Sometimes bad process is good results. Sometimes good process is bad results. I think the idea behind signing Tim Stauffer made sense. It just didn't pan out.
Yeah. Who are we comparing Stauffer to now? Vogelsang, right?
Well, no, Belisle.
Oh, but Belisle.
Stauffer,
as I recall, they brought him here because he wanted a chance to start. He was hoping to get a chance to start.
Well, and where better than Minnesota?
And there was just no life in his fastball from day one of spring training. And I know people have said, and you've said on Twitter, that Stauffer's career, he was, you know, high 90s kind of guy. But I seem to recall like mid-80s is what he was taking the mound with in spring training.
Yeah, 85, 86.
And he was
maybe
really concerned that this was just it, you know, and it turned out to be it.
Yeah, he surfaced with the Mets for a little bit, and that was it after the Twins.
Yeah,
I think
he never pitched in the – no.
I don't know. I think they signed him to a minor league deal, and I think that was it. He pitched at Staten Island or whatever their AAA affiliate is.
That was it, and that was too bad because he was a – that kind of potential, you know, confidant for the young bullpen, et cetera. But he did want a chance to start. The guy they got out of the Padre bullpen,
Blaine Boyer,
that same year, right? Same year,
2015. Yeah,
yeah, that did work out with Boyer. And so I made the point.
He's not unlike Boyer either. That's a good point.
I made the point that they got Boyer at a great discount for about $750,000 plus incentives, maybe $800,000.
He's never made more than $1 million in any year, I think I read.
Crazy. And And Stauffer for two, if you just flip those and, you know, you combine them and you say, hey, how about we throw $3 million against the wall and we get just what we got out of Boyer that year,
mm-hmm.
that's good business. Boyer, you know, I know a good BABIP, et cetera, but really had a fine year for him. And then crazily, you know, ended up with the Brewers. Couldn't really get any market going.
But again, he was okay last year too.
He was. Yeah. He was. Doesn't miss bats. He's pitching in the wrong era. And I know it is definitely helpful to have a 95-plus fastball out of the bullpen, and it is definitely eye-catching to be able to miss to strike out a batter per inning. But and Blaine Boyer's strike, you know, K9 is ridiculously low, right? Mm-hmm. It was like 5, isn't it? And but there are these intangibles that he brings that we know that he just makes everything better.
Well, there was a Fangraphs piece that he induces some of the weakest contact mm-hmm. in the game. There's probably something to that too.
Late movement, yes. So you may not be missing the bats, but you're missing the barrel,
the meat.
And then we can measure that too mm-hmm. by soft contact and hard contact and line drive rate, and we can measure the type of contact. So maybe there's not enough attention paid to those with the late movement. I also think that there's another, and you tell me, you correct me if this is out there somewhere. I haven't found it yet, but I would love, and maybe teams chart this, but I think the best indicator of late movement, because it doesn't have to be a high 90s fastball to do this, a lot of times can be high 80s, the late movement that blows up bats. So I would like to see, you know, as the year goes on, how many, I'd like a column, bats broken for every pitcher.
Please remit to Louisville Slugger for how many bats each guy has broken, or axe bats, or max bats, or whatever.
I would like to see that, because I think it's pretty hard to, you might get a, you know, a dying quail hit off of a broken bat. It's pretty rare. You're certainly going to have a very hard time hitting it for an extra base
hit.
Well,
it's going to be 50 mile per hour exit velocity. It's not going anywhere.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, your exit velocity, we're measuring it that way. But it would just be fun to have that. And if that is out there somewhere, maybe someone can let us know.
It seems like it would be on the back of, like, these baseball cards I got when I was a kid, like the more cartoony ones. Like, this guy blew up 12 bats this year. Like, that would be actually a legitimately cool statistic to read.
I remember a couple years ago, when Brian Dunsing started the year and suddenly was blowing up bats, and I did a little note on it, but he stopped blowing them up, or I stopped charting it. But, you know, I remember about 2 weeks in, he had blown up 3 bats and he had no business doing that. But he's like, what's going on here? You know, because generally it's the cutter that will have that late, sharp, short movement that can do it. And maybe that's what Matt Belisle is going to do. Maybe he'll be the bat blower upper. But, you know, you break a guy, you get in on his fists and you're breaking bats. Of course, you can break him off the end too, with that just missing barrels, and that's mm-hmm. that is a Blaine Boyer thing, and he'll be doing it for the Braves, I guess. That's who signed him.
Well, so the corresponding move for Belisle was designating Byung-ho Park for assignment. 0 to 10 or 0 to 100. What was your level of surprise that Byung-ho Park was the name going in the other direction?
I just thought they had other options that. Certainly people the night before when Belisle news broke were throwing some names out there. I don't want to endorse anybody that they should throw overboard, but they had other people that they could throw overboard who've had multiple chances and little reason besides their salary or their youth to say that maybe it'll happen. And you do have quite a bit invested in Park. You know, just the sunk cost is the posting fee. That's not coming back.
Right.
Plus the 2.75 from last year. Coming off injury, I think they are confident, from what I'm told. They're feeling pretty confident that he will pass through waivers, and I have been able to get from 3 sources that there is nothing afoot to send him back to the KBO. I thought there may have been, because just before that, Byung, it might have been the night before, that it came out that Mark Reynolds re-signed with the Rockies, and he had no market here, really, mm-hmm. anywhere. Signed a minor league deal with the Rockies, turning down $3 million a year to go to play in the KBO. Well, if he, who's not a former 2-time MVP in the KBO and is not from South Korea and is not immensely popular there, could have had $3 million, I wonder, you know, Byung-ho could probably get 4 a year,
at
you
least,
know, multi-year.
Yeah.
He could make up the money he would have to walk away from here if he'd go back. But as I wrote in November from the GM meetings, that people who had been talking with him said that he was adamant. He wanted another shot at this. And so I think this is going to be a blow to his pride, no doubt, if he clears, regardless. I mean, if he gets claimed, wherever he shows up, day one of spring training, he's going to be, you know, we knew how motivated he was last year, but now I think there'll be a little chip on that shoulder, because for the first time since he was a minor leaguer in the KBO and was kind of failing in his mid-20s.
Yeah, I remember that.
He's been told by this very move that you are not good enough right now.
I see it as a calculated move where it's, if we're going to pay him this much, and I say we're as the Twins, mm-hmm. it may as well be off the roster and earning his way back on when everything shakes out, whether they put Glenn Perkins on the 60 to re-add him, whatever corresponding move they make later on. If they had to re-add him, they could re-add him. But if somebody else wants to pay him this money, fine. By all means, you know, the White Sox, the Rays, whoever. The MLB.com depth chart for the White Sox right now has Matt Davidson at DH. Now, I believe the way it works with the MLB.com ones is that they don't put any non-40-man guys on there. So whether it's Cody Ashe or even Avisail Garcia, who I believe they have penciled in at right, either way, you're not talking about guys that have as high a ceiling as Park. Now, Park's floor, which we saw last year, can be fairly low when he's not well. It's a gamble for the White Sox that would probably be justifiable. His price point probably wouldn't be prohibitive to the Rays, who just signed Logan Morrison to play first base. They're going to move Brad Miller, I think, from first to second and shuffle some things around. It's a situation where there's some teams I could see taking a chance, but I think the Twins calculated as, okay, if they're going to pay him anyway, take him off the roster, put somebody else on. If somebody else wants him, either you could maybe work out a trade for a real low-end, you know, A-ball pitcher, or somebody can take them off your hands in a straight waiver claim. There's a lot of moving pieces that, you know, none of it would surprise me, and I think I see what the Twins were going for there, and I think it's defensible. Even though a lot of people either were shocked or feigned shock when the move was announced a couple days ago.
Yeah, I didn't feel a shock at all. The more I thought about it, you know, I do think he has a good shot to clear waivers. I don't think it's automatic, and that's why I also think that the Twins would, if he does clear, they're not going to release him. So that was just a miscommunication.
Yeah, I think they'll outright him. It's on Roto World. If they release him, the Rays would sign him. I'm like, no, I don't think the Twins are going to release him.
Ken Rosenthal, who doesn't mess anything up, had a miscommunication, I think, with someone who
yeah, that's the Roto World thing I'm talking about, yeah.
So he corrected that this morning, and this makes sense. The only way that would have made sense, if the Twins wanted people to think that they were going to release him if he cleared waivers, that would just be a way to try to make sure he cleared waivers so you could bring him into minor league camp. You know, but that's not what's going on, and that's not how they operate. So, I cannot handicap for you. You know, I don't like to set odds or anything. I cannot handicap whether he will be showing up at Twins spring training or not.
He's already down in Fort Myers. I saw it tweeted today, like working. Yeah, yeah, so I mean, that's
sure.
good. But
okay, but oh, he's going to work.
Yeah.
You know that. But, you know, the other thing I think the Twins, in terms of timing of this, I think it's wise to – they saw what happened on the market, the open market, with the devaluation of power.
Players like Park, basically.
Yes. One-trick pony on paper kind of guy, the Chris Carters.
Yeah, is he better than Chris Carter at his peak? I don't
know. Mike Napoli's still looking for a job essentially right now. Mike Napoli's final 2 months in an Indians uniform are basically what Park did in his 2 months here, really. I mean, that's not too different. Mm-hmm. He could get out of his own way. So,
At his best, he struck out a ton.
If somebody wants to claim Park and take less than $10 million off the Twins' hands, and maybe they just turn right around and try to get Napoli. Maybe they do try to do that. But I don't – right now, it's a worthwhile gamble. And, could it blow up on him? I don't know how much it would blow up on him. I do think that there's more to be seen from Byung-ho. I don't think the game was too fast for him or – you know, we saw moments where he just absolutely obliterated balls that traveled out to parts of target field that aren't normally visited from the right side.
Jim Thome territory, but from the right side instead of the left.
This is legitimate, big-time power. Just, I do think that that hand was and wrist was bothering him going back to spring training. Little by little, you hear more about that. And he just, you know, you couldn't get him out of the cage in spring training. He was just going to be the most prepared hitter ever. And he overdid it. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, they started to pitch him a little differently, and he even in spring training, struggle with some sliders in the dirt, and he saw more and more of that. And then the big velocity. We only saw him catch up for a home run one time, I believe, to a pitch at 95 or more. Might have been the only hit he had, actually, I remember against the Yankees. But he's 30, too, so you know, you don't know if this is the beginning of a downside anyway,
right,
for him. But fascinating turn of events. And I do know that, you know, going back to the GM meetings, that Byung-ho Park was a guy the Twins didn't want to really comment. I asked them about him at that time. They didn't want to comment on him publicly because privately, I've learned subsequently, you know, he was kind of being offered around and there wasn't much market, as there wouldn't be. So somebody might grab him, but everything we've seen this offseason, the way the guys we just mentioned have been treated on the open market, I don't think there's too many realistic landing spots.
So you don't like to set odds on anything. Can I get odds on a Dozier-Dodger trade from you now?
Tell your brother no.
No. he can be a pest. He's your number one fan, but he can also be a little bit of a pest.
Not at all.
So the Twins did make another waiver claim yesterday. I was out buying a stroller, and so I missed it right away. But infielder A-Ray Adrianza coming over from the Milwaukee Brewers, he had spent, I guess, probably no time in a Brewers uniform, but he was on the roster all of, I think, 2 days before they designated him.
Yeah.
So they designated him to make room for Jesus Aguilar. The Giants had designated him to make room for Nick Hundley, a catcher who I believe has played for the Orioles, and he's been around Padres most notably. Going in the other direction from Adrianza is reliever Pat Light, who saw a fairly significant amount of time with the team last year after he came over in the Fernando Abad trade. Let's first get to Adrianza. I do have a post on coldomaha.com if people want to check that out. Glove guy, probably harkens back to kind of those banjo-hitting shortstops from the 80s and 90s where it was all glove and less with the bat. But didn't you break down his home runs? It was Kenta Maeda, Andy Pettit, and Clayton Kershaw. So
yeah,
kind of a who's who to homer off. The Kershaw home run I found on YouTube, which was it was an impressive drive. He's got a little thunder in his bat when he makes contact, but he doesn't look entirely unlike like a Danny Santana offensively. But a glove-first shortstop behind Jorge Polanco and Eduardo Escobar, I kind of see where this makes sense, and so I don't really have a gripe with the claim, so to speak.
No, it does have a little bit of, you know, parts of four different seasons in the majors and Giants time, obviously. So he's played in meaningful games at least every other year. And he's had his moments in the Venezuelan Winter League.
But that's an organization you want to steal players from. I mean, the Giants organization has guys. You couldn't unseat Brandon Crawford. Well, surprise, Joe Panic, you know, Kelby Tomlinson.
Mm-hmm.
They've had some pretty good middle infield talent come through that system here. I did write, too, 3 years running, he was the best defensive infielder in the Giants system. He won the California League, Baseball America, which you're obviously very familiar with. I believe 2010, they voted him the best defensive infielder in the Cali League. And then Kylie McDaniel, who works for the Braves now, who's with Fangraphs, said he's Cesar's Tourist 2.0, which is not a bad thing for a utility infielder.
No, and there was a period of time. Now, this guy's 27 years old, but in his around age 20, 21, 22, he was consistently in the top 10 of the Giants' prospects.
He was the number one Arizona League prospect, or number three or something like that, in like 2008. So a long time ago.
Yes.
But he was obviously very well thought of when he was young.
Yeah, and there was probably always that sense that the bat will eventually come around as he adds strength. Well, you know, he doesn't look like he has any speed based on the stolen base attempts. Doesn't look like that's part of his game. But sure-handed and more so from at shortstop. It looked like the metrics aren't too good at second. In fact, pretty bad over a full season. But at shortstop, looked like he'd be pretty useful. And, you know, as far as the guy, you know, Pat Light being moved aside, that's and put at risk. I don't see anybody claiming him. Now that I say that, you know, somebody probably will. But, I mean, I know that back in July, it seemed like, wow, the Red Sox are trading Pat Light. Or on August 1st, you know, this guy was number 13 in their system, a very deep system. We never saw it here. We never saw it.
No.
Good guy, supposedly a big spin rate on the split, but he didn't touch. He didn't threaten 100 here, and his fastball stuck around mid 90s and straight. So he was healthy supposedly. He just didn't have it here. But more likely he'll clear and go on to AAA.
Yeah, I think that if he doesn't clear, he might be one of those bounce around guys.
Could be, yeah.
That we've seen. I think it was Adam Rosales was back and forth between Texas and Oakland and Texas and Oakland and Texas and Oakland all in the span of like 18 months or whatever. But again, a good guy. Yeah, it just, to me, you look at that bullpen totem pole and he's probably the number 10, 11, 12 reliever in limbo with like a Alex Wimmers, which isn't necessarily a good thing for him given his stature and all that. The other thing too that we discussed actually in the Twins clubhouse when the Twins had made the trade was it's a little odd given all the issues in the Red Sox bullpen all season long that he got one appearance. And I think it wasn't it kind of similar to JT Chagua's first with the Twins where it didn't go well and he got sent back, I think, or he had a very short cup of coffee with the Red Sox, and I think it didn't go very well. But it was pretty telling that the Red Sox couldn't use him in a year where they desperately needed relief help, and instead they went to the outside. You know, maybe they knew something that we didn't know, or maybe it was, he's just not going to help us this year.
We have a bulletin. I don't know if it's shown up on your screen, but after an entire offseason of speculation, and we even brought his name up here again, there's a report from the Dallas Morning News that a deal is in place for Mike Napoli to return to the Texas Rangers, one of the many teams he's taken to the post to the World Series.
Good for him.
Yeah, MLB.com originally reported, and Fort Worth Star-Telegram is in there too, that a one-year deal was in place. It was kind of suggested all along that they might have to wait until Valentine's Day to announce it, because then at that point you can put somebody on a 60-day and they have somebody in that regard to create an opening. And
when can you start putting people on the 60?
I think it's the first day that all camps open, or February 14th, I think.
Do you suspect Phil Hughes, Glenn Perkins, either of them?
No, I was a little surprised to hear you mention that about Perkins, because
That shoulder injury is just so catastrophic that I wonder. But
he was upbeat when I talked to him at Twins Fest. He really was.
When does the 60 start? Like, does it start that day too?
You can do some part of it retroactive, but you can only retroactive. I got to double check this with the new CBA. But,
sure.
As you go into a season, the 60 days, any DL stint can only be retroactive about a week going back towards spring training, 5, 6, or 7 days.
So it can't start February 12 or whatever.
Maybe 10 days. Maybe you can get the final 10 days of spring training to count towards your...
Okay, because if you put on 60 now, that takes you
be how it would work. That would just be you're allowed to do that so that you can start manipulating your 40-man in that way to create openings. But, Napoli back to the Rangers makes a ton of sense, and then that... takes them out of play for Park. I did think that they were maybe a stealth team for Park because Shin-Soo Choo is a huge mentor to him, and I had one of my favorite interviews all last year with any player was with Choo here at Target Field about Park, and I wrote a story, and unfortunately, just as it worked out, Park was sent out to Rochester as the Twins were returning from Chicago to play Texas.
And just before his park.
That's right.
They were going to do his Park's Porch or something like that. And they had all these T-shirts and everything, and they had to
cancel. More importantly, he was going to get to hang out with his good friend Choo and have dinner and get some mental strength that way. And it didn't work out. But it's Napoli back there. The guy's been to the postseason now 8 out of the past 10 years. He's the Billy Paltz, if you remember, of baseball. And you can't have a postseason without him, apparently. And he also tends to have an impact in a clubhouse. So he was an interesting possibility here. But I also don't know how much he really has left against righties.
It'll be interesting to see how much cash he gets, too.
Well, they're saying here that it's likely for less than $10 million. Last year's deal with the Indians... it was $7 million base and then up to $3 million in incentives. And he maxed all the incentives out. And there are some who are around that team who thought he was begging Tito Francona to keep playing him just so he could get all of his money. And then he didn't have much left in October. He really didn't have anything left from mid-August on. But we'll see if he can turn back the clock.
Well, when we talked to the Meltdown, when you and I brought his name up at the beginning of the offseason, you said, I can't see under $10 million. I think that was you. And that was because we were also early in the offseason when you're kind of positive about the amount of money, and then you know, he kind of dwindles. You know, you wouldn't have expected Fernando Salas to sign for as little as he did.
No,
good spin rate. Good.
Well, what do you think about all of a sudden, a veteran right-handed reliever without much market gets 1 year and $3 million over and over and over. Didn't Romo get that? Didn't Joe Smith get that? That's become. And I remember, you know, there are times when you know they just had an owners meeting. And, you know, they have meetings out there at the GM meetings for everybody to plan for arbitration, certainly, and they didn't know what the new CBA would be. But it is interesting when the exact offer is the only offer you can get. You know, because obviously if you sign for 1 year, $3 million, well, they said the raise.
But the same with Blevins and Logan, the two, 6.5, but identical.
A little weird to me. I think that there definitely is a slotting system for free agency that is very unofficial. Because that would be collusion.
Yeah.
But there's a reason sometimes that guys get the exact same offer, and that's just all we can do. And you keep hearing it. No, and the agents eventually just say, "Okay, Uncle, I'll take it. One year, $3 million.
Probably six or eight million, depending on
Napoli.
Yeah, maybe six base, lower base, more same incentives. I don't know.
Yeah, probably max value of pushing 10 again, and that way he feels the player's always confident, and the team has to be pretty. Because Rangers didn't have a whole lot of money to throw around.
Did he make sense for the Twins at that price point?
No, because a scout that I trust very much, who saw him a lot late in the year in September, and into the postseason, said. You could not recommend him as a weapon anything more than a platoon bat. If you're looking for a right-hander, right-handed DH, and his defense was never good at first, and he was never a good catcher, he's actually gone backwards defensively.
He's not going to give anything more than Robbie Grossman then.
Yeah, and you already had Park in-house. Robbie Grossman from the right side in a smaller sample, but as we've said, he was Mike Trout from against lefties last year. Well,
now you just got to find a Mike Trout against righties.
Maybe you give him a Trout. Maybe give him a chance to Trout out again. But
I thought you were shortening tryout. Give him a Trout.
A Trout.
Give him a Trout.
Trout.
Yeah.
I had a Canadian moment or something. But it's
a little Chris Jericho action there.
I think the redundancies. There's no need to add to redundancies.
So. With the hypothetical value in place for Napoli, how does that affect Chris Carter's market? Comparable hitter, younger, probably has a little more juice in his bat, but will probably have to settle for less. I guess here's where I'm at. When I compared the two for the Twins before I considered that Napoli had faded, it's basically comes down to how much you value the leadership or the perceived leadership. I've never heard Chris Carter as good or bad, so I don't know which he is. But I do think that it matters in baseball circles what Napoli has. Making the playoffs, whether it was because of him or because of the team around him, teams will intrinsically have some level of value on that. And so I still think he signs for more than Carter does. In that sense, if you had to choose at the same dollars, which one made more sense for the Twins? Again, now knowing that only Carter is available. If you had to choose one of the two, which would you pick? And then if you had to choose between those two or Vargas, which would you pick?
Wow.
Lots of layers.
All those people you mentioned, there's only one that has previously helped Falvey teams and Levine teams reach the World Series. So that you connect those dots and then you just try to cover your eyes and pretend mid-August to late October didn't happen.
And we did here too. I mean,
you people can do. You half full or half empty. He does have a proven record of finding himself in the middle of very happy clubhouses. But and he is an upbeat individual. But it's one thing to be part of something where things are going well and to augment it and tell your stories that way, and grow your beard or whatever. But it's quite another thing. To step into a 103 loss clubhouse with one winning season in the last six, with a lot of young kids still, and lift it up.
Reinvent the wheel, basically.
To do what Torrey Hunter did in 2015. Of course, he was doing that from a perspective of former Twin back with his original love.
He had a lot of backstory pushing that.
Give you everything I got. Terrible start. Buried in the standings, we're not going to worry about it, all that stuff. He was not going to take no for an answer from his teammates, and so that's it went that way. But somebody who's never played for the Twins or hasn't been on a really bad team for a while,
right?
To come in where it could again be a challenge to have a decent April, I don't know that leadership heft immediately translates, and that's why you don't overpay for it in this spot. A year hence, perhaps the Twins will have stabilized, gotten their win total up around the high 70s or something, and even pushed 500. And then you're looking for somebody to take you from good to great again. And that is the toughest jump, as we talked about quite a bit after 2015. But the jump from historically bad back to respectable can be negotiated with a different type of leadership. Mm-hmm. Just somebody who, like a Matt Belisle, like a Ryan Vogelsong, and who's been around a little bit, and like a Jason Castro, and just has professionalism every day, and make sure that they take a look around the clubhouse and onto the field and in the workout room, and make sure professional behavior is happening at every turn.
Yeah, find a way to make the Twins great again. Okay, so one word answers: Napoli Carter. Who are you picking if you're the 2017 Twins? Which one do you prefer?
I would have taken Napoli.
Okay, Napoli or Vargas at their price points?
Well, Kenny Vargas making nothing.
Yeah, so you're cool with the Twins rolling with Vargas at DH.
Give him another shot.
Yep. I think I agree with that, too. And so I think that's the way it's going to go. I don't think
I'd like to see more Grossman DHing against lefties and Vargas DHing against righties.
Because you're not going to bench Rosario that much.
I don't want to see Robbie Grossman in left field. And I don't think Robbie Grossman wants to see Robbie Grossman in left field. Well, I think that was horrific.
But it's not like he's always been that way. But it's possible that he's not particularly good.
He had a bad year defensively. And Rosario can affect a game defensively and holds his own against left-handed pitching.
Yeah,
this is a very big year for Eddie Rosario. This is the year for Eddie Rosario. It's a prove it to me year for everybody who has new leadership, obviously. But Eddie Rosario, doesn't matter who his bosses are.
Yeah,
he's got a lot of proving to do.
This is: do you become David Peralta or do you become Aaron Hicks? You know, you can't be in the middle. You got to be a fourth outfielder or a starter. You can't sit in this no man's land. It was funny to me. Somebody asked me too about Pat Light. They said, "Well, why are they getting rid of Pat Light? All he needs is control." And I invoked, "Yeah, like Eddie Rosario only needs to walk to become a stud. Like that's a big deal, and you can't sit around waiting for that forever."
Such a thing as a fatal flaw.
Yeah, you know, I've probably got one too. So okay, let's quickly break down the 25-man roster. I don't know if you read it, but I'm going to rehash.
Did not.
Okay, then you're coming into a cold, and you can grill me.
All right.
So my regular starting lineup, probably not any qualms here. Castro, Mauer, Dozier, Sano, Polanco, Rosario in left, Buxton, Kepler, and then Vargas at DH. I said fairly good bunch. Castro solid behind the plate. I like the idea of a platoon behind the plate if they can get Murphy's bat going. But basically, starting lineup, any gripes there?
You have Murphy there?
No, I have Castro starting and then maybe Murphy playing against lefties more often.
And don't rule out Jimenez.
Well, and I'll have the bench. We'll go over the bench next. I wouldn't rule him out either. And then I did say, you know, hey, maybe Pedro Alvarez makes sense with Grossman at DH if they send Vargas down. I don't think they're going to send Vargas down, but they did get the fourth option, as you reported, mm-hmm. as I have also ran with, giving you credit, of course.
True. It's true.
So there is that option. Pedro Alvarez can hit righties. I mean, you'd have a nasty platoon between him and Grossman, but I don't know if they want Pedro Alvarez. I don't know if they want to go down that road. But as far as
I wanted Valbuena, but the Angels
and that money was
fit.
Sane. He made a sense for. I even made the case the Orioles should have signed him, moved Machado to third, and then have J.J. Hardy be.
I didn't get it. I didn't understand his tepid market.
It's weird because he can do a lot of things for a team, and a team that needs the talent. The Angels did a great job. They need to supplement that team badly. I thought that was a great move. Okay, so my offense, you more or less agree with though.
I zoned out on what you got. Did you anoint a starting shortstop?
I put Jorge Polanco. I like Eduardo Escobar a lot. I think he's also valuable Sano insurance at third base. And I think they'll find a way to get him 350 plate appearances somehow or another. You know, maybe he takes on an Eduardo Nunez role where they ask him as an emergency to play left field. I don't know what they'll do.
Will be interesting. I think they'll line it up that way on opening day. It will be interesting to see how Polanco handles you know, his defensive problems, and he's going to have defensive problems at shortstop. He just is.
He's not Pedro Florimon or
those
anything.
Those will go – he's going to have defensive problems. The metrics and the eye test and everything, and there are plays that he is not equipped to make with his arm from shortstop. Deep in the hole, and now you got Sano there ranging to his left, using ranging liberally.
Yeah.
There's there're going to be some three hoppers that get through the hole, and will that affect Jorge's bat? I don't know. He's a pretty upbeat guy. He's certainly very confident.
But that'll be
hitting.
Much to Kyle Gibson's dismay. Yeah. Ground ball guy.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see where Jorge has his playing time last year came when they were buried. There was no pressure. You know, they just said just go out there and get your 2-3 hits a night, and we don't care if you mess up a few plays in the field, but. Mm-hmm. The metrics said at shortstop for that 6-7 week audition, he was as bad as it gets.
Cover
at shortstop.
Your eyes.
If he starts a year and costs him a few games, they're going to have to lift his spirits. I could see some of the same conversations defensively about him that you had about Danny Santana a couple years ago, because when the losses are in April and May, they're just more important.
Yeah, and I think that's where the Adrianza, whatever we haven't discussed how exactly to say it. I think that's where that. Signing comes or that addition comes into play and could be
just somebody to catch the ball. I mean, the Jason Castro signing was somebody to frame the pitch to control the pitchers and help them along. And
well, and I spoke with a Twins official that said preparation. This is a general back there who will command the meetings. It will be a situation where it's not just framing. It's going to be the pre-series meetings, they're revamping this. And I think that's why it makes sense to keep most of the pitching staff intact. Is like, first of all, you're not going to go out and spend a bunch of money on Jason Hamill, who won't move the needle enough for it to matter. You know, if you win 80 games versus 83 games, you're still sitting at home in October.
People don't want to hear this, but they're still they have to be in fact-finding mode.
Absolutely.
On a number of low-cost options that are already in-house. The worst thing you can do to step into a new situation where these people have never played for you is to run them off, you know, just out of how you viewed them from afar, or you don't like the way the scouting report's presented to you, or you don't like the 2-second meeting you had with them at Twins Fest.
Or they're just not your guy.
Yeah, just not, you know, obviously there have been subtractions.
Yeah.
There have been a number of subtractions. But, you know, and there's fans out there who want them to throw the Danny Santanas overboard, or they want them to throw Rosario overboard, or they've had enough of Escobar or Gibson even. You know, there are people where it's last chance saloon here, and it's time to put your best foot forward to if it's you had a great year already, try to replicate that year. If you're coming off a terrible year, make sure that that's the aberration. But this is not a good year to have a down year.
No.
As a Twin. Especially a young Twin, because you know, you've got all. Some of these guys have 6, 8, 10 years in the organization, whatever. It could all go out the window because it's all. This is a year of evaluation.
They're gonna hit the old eject button, like the space travel, like the Jetsons, maybe.
There will be some ejections, but I do think at some point, certainly the pitchers will be rooting for. Privately, that guy. And it's an interesting point you make that to have a late inning defensive replacement who can really make sure leads don't get away.
Especially if Kinsler's working the late innings.
You got a closer at shortstop, basically. Yep. That's not a bad idea. Then they've not had that kind of guy in several years.
No, exactly. So I got a 4-man bench. The catcher, John Ryan Murphy, I think it could feasibly be Jimenez. I wouldn't throw Garver completely out just because he's on the roster. If Garver wasn't a 40-man guy, I would dismiss him just because I don't think he's quite there yet, or I think there's guys in front of him. I do think they like Jimenez, obviously the Texas factor and the Cleveland factor. It was funny. He went, I believe it goes Cleveland 1 year, Texas, Cleveland the next year, and then Texas the year after that, made his major league debut against the Twins. So he's got a lot of tangles in his web here between the Twins and the Indians and the Rangers. So there's a non-zero chance that Jimenez is the backup to start the season. But I'm going to roll with Murphy because I like the right-handed bat. Obviously, very good framing grades. Both he and Castro, I think, were top 10 on Baseball Prospectus last year. So I got Murphy, Escobar, Santana, Grossman. I'm not rocking the boat. We had a spirited Danny Santana discussion on Twitter. You and I talked about it off the air. I don't love Danny Santana. I was banging the drum for regression after that first year. But here's the deal. I'm going to bring up his career stats. If Danny Santana can hit at his career mark and give you a body in five or six positions. This is a guy who's hit 268, 302, 382 for a triple slash. You would take that from your 25th man. Denny Hocking was the cockroach. The Twins, you just couldn't kill him. He was on the team forever. If he can give them that, that's an 88 OPS plus, they'd take that out of Danny Santana. You and I discussed how toolsy he is, all that fun stuff. He's going into his age 26 season. If they designate him tomorrow, I'll get a million people telling me I was wrong. Here's where it is for me. I don't care about Danny Santana, but I can see why the organization does. Because even if he's not good at any of those five positions defensively, and again, who's good at five? If he was good at those five positions, we wouldn't be having this discussion because he would be the poor man's Ben Zobrist instead of Danny freaking Santana. Like, we wouldn't have this discussion if he was a good defensive shortstop and center fielder. I think if he gives you his career line and plays acceptable, not even average, but acceptable defense at five positions, a guy like that has value in the eyes of an organization.
Well, Molitor, you know, still views him as he has this eventual vision for him as being Tony Phillips-ish. Now, Tony Phillips was a wonderful all-around player and fine hitter, but that's the guy that he had played with and against and wants Santana to focus on. The guy that pops into my mind, and then I looked at the numbers to make sure I wasn't crazy, because from my Marlins coverage days, would you say that Emilio Bonifacio had a successful, mildly successful utility career?
Oh, yeah. I liked Emilio a lot. Stole some bases and played all over. And,
yes.
You know, if you have a pulse as your 25th man, I mean, I wanted Chris Coughlin. He would have made a ton of sense for this roster instead of Danny Santana. But guess what? Danny Santana's 26, and you can't ignore that 2014 happened. Even if you regress it to an average batting average on balls in play, I think you probably still have a 750 OPS. You know, subtracting 75 points of OPS, he still has a pretty darn good 2014. You can't ignore that happened, even though it's...
With the 405 BABIP. Well, I'll just put it to you this way. I went back and looked, and Emilio Bonifacio, who the Marlins acquired from the Nationals in a Scott Olsen trade and a Josh Willingham trade, from 07 to 10, through his age 25 season, his OPS plus in the majors was 65 through 923
quite a bit worse than Danny.
Plate appearances. Danny Santana, through his age 25 season, is 3 years, as you mentioned, 88.
He had 65 last year, ironically, though. You know, you mentioned the 65.
But 88 through the 3 years. Now, Bonifacio in 11 had his career year, and that was 360 on base percentage and 40 stolen bases, I believe, and a 2.7 WAR, according to Baseball Reference. Danny Santana may have already had his career year in half a season, I believe 3.9 R WAR. But the point being is that 405 BABIP, everybody's saying, well, total fluke, and yes, it came down, and all the other numbers came down. That was predictable. That's regression. But it was a 372 BABIP in the career year for Bonifacio of 2011, and his career, speedy guys are going to have high BABIPs, career is 328 BABIP, and Santana at this point is still a 346 career BABIP, even after two really painful years of correction. So I'm just saying, switch hitting, speedsters, not good enough to just leave alone at one position, but can fake it enough and provide value around the diamond and have some hot streaks. If they have two hot streaks within a season that lasts for five, six games, and they tide you over until the regulars come back, they've served their purpose. Danny Santana could certainly, he's still certainly well-positioned to have Emilio Bonifacio's career, which was okay. It was okay. And he was around some winning situations and contributed to them. And there was a reason that teams kept giving him a chance to play for five different teams from 11 to 14. And his OPS plus in that range was 87. So what Danny Santana has done on balance over these first two and a half seasons, basically, with a lot of nagging injuries mixed in. You know, let's not forget, this guy is kind of brittle and had some bad luck. The Grossman thing in Toronto ended his year. Let's see what he can do healthy, because the tools are all there. That's what the scouts will keep coming back to. Tools have always been there. Big arm, loves to play, has had some really good times in winter ball, really productive periods. The makeup is very solid. They know what they have there. And, again, important. You carry him one more year. If he has a good spring, see what he can provide. But he has some more Bonifacio to him than Tony Phillips, certainly.
Well, it just, yeah, just to me, I can see why teams value him. It doesn't mean that I think he's a good player. It doesn't mean that I think he should be ironclad on this roster. But I understand why the Twins have kept him around. There's a lot to like about him from a tool standpoint that not only did Terry Ryan see, you know, everybody got so sick of Terry Ryan's evaluations, even though, quite frankly, a very good evaluator. The new guys see it too. That should tell you something that, hey, there's a very low hurdle to clear to be the best or to be a guy on the back of the bench. And now a guy that can play all over. Like, let's say Byron Buxton strains a hammy, needs 2 days off. You don't got to go down to Rochester. You got Danny who can step in, or you can move Rosario over and you've got Danny can play left. That's valuable. And you know what? In a small sample, maybe he gives you a 750 OPS just off the top of his head because he faces enough pitchers that throw him just fastballs because they don't know enough about him. There's room here for him to be okay. So any gripes with my bench, though? I mean, I don't necessarily see a Garver or a Palka or a Granite jumping in there. I think Adrianza now has to be considered a fair chance to steal that job from Danny. I think they could go a five-man bench and shorten the bullpen, but I just don't think they're going to do that right out of the gates.
No, I don't think you're off base there. I mean, there's always something, some revelation each spring that we didn't see coming. But generally, options remaining and time on the service clock and money invested and all of that is going to factor in. So it usually works out the way you anticipate, with maybe one or two little misses
or
here.
Or somebody
there.
Gets hurt.
Yeah, there's always the injury. And, of course, you got people coming back from rehab. You don't know. I would think it's a fair guess that Perkins needs a couple weeks into the season to round out his rehab. And mm-hmm. I think that Hughes is going to give it every effort to be ready from day one. I don't see why he couldn't be ready, because he was throwing bullpens by the end of last year.
Yeah, I have him in my rotation.
I think he can start the year, but will he be able to maintain it?
So my five-man rotation, Irvin Santana starting on opening day, I think you can probably write with a pen, right?
I would say, yeah.
I got Kyle Gibson second, Hector Santiago third, Phil Hughes fourth, Trevor May fifth.
I don't see Trevor May winning the rotation spot out of spring training.
Well, so the bullet
points
here.
He has options left, and I think they're going to have to use them.
No, I have no Duffy, no Barrios, no Vogelsong in my rotation, which I think each of those things may individually rankle people. If they send May out to lengthen out, I could see that. Or if they just say, hey, look, we know you want to be a starter. We know you have the financial motivation to be a starter, but you're just a better reliever. I could see that happening as well. So this is probably partially wish casting because I like Trevor May as a pitcher. What he did as a starter before they moved him in favor of Pelfrey. So what do you see as a, you know, I think the first four are pretty ironclad, assuming Hughes is healthy.
Yeah, I would agree with that, and I think they want Barrios to win the spot, but the WBC is going to complicate it a little bit because I do think at this point they're going to let him go. And he seemed to think that when I talked to him at Twins Fest that they were going to let him go. And then if he's there, facing entirely different competition, entirely different intensity level than spring training, you just don't know where that's going to put his he's got a lot – got a lot on his plate still. He's got to round out those delivery changes that they're trying to get him to make late in the year, which are not easy to make at any stage of a career, and certainly not easy to make in the majors. And he's going to have to prove that he can be around the plate more. And I do think that he, Gibson, and Santana, the metrics would show and the eye test would suggest that Jason Castro is going to have his biggest impact on guys like that who, if they can pitch ahead, everything opens up for him. But I would say that I just have a sense, I don't want to overplay this, but I just have a sense that as long as he comes up doing what he's done historically.
Oh, I think I know where you're going with this.
I think the fifth starter is Ryan
Vogelsong.
Put an
RV, you're going to bring pull in the RV into
Ryan
number
five? Vogelsong, I'm going to double down on it. I think he's the fifth starter because as a veteran, he can demand his free agency with 5 days to go in
the
spring.
People will hate that, but I think it could
I
be
think
okay.
I think he's going to win the fifth spot in the rotation. He's as his agent, former Twins outfielder Dave Meyer, likes to say, this guy may be 39 chronologically, but his arm's about 32 because he missed a lot of time early in his career. He did. Tommy John.
He was a huge prospect for the Giants, wasn't he? I mean, wasn't he pretty well-regarded?
He was the guy they traded to get Jason Schmidt.
That's pretty big.
So And then this guy, you know, he reinvented himself overseas. He comes back
Colby Lewis effect.
The Twins had, you know, several dalliances with trying to sign him. They certainly tried to sign him at the time of Molitor's debut. He was high on their list, but the Giants still wanted him. And then, you know, he's been through a lot.
Well, who's going to turn down the Giants if the money's the same?
Of course. And I just think that was a stealth signing. I was surprised that his market didn't get him a major league offer somewhere, yeah, considering what he's done.
Maybe Kansas City. You know, there's places that need it, and he could have signed for
the
a
time,
lot.
Yeah, if he had waited a little bit longer, you know, you just don't know. Needs do change. But because Duffy can still be sent out, and Barrios could still be sent out, and because May can still be sent out again, and Vogelsong cannot, and you might want to also carry Haley as your long man. Let's see what he's got.
Yeah, it's very possible.
So this is a way to get Haley into your bullpen as a long man, not have to return him to the Red Sox. Mm-hmm. And it's a way to make
sure.
The
Red Sox would take him back for sure,
I would guess. And, and a way to get Vogelsong to keep him around. The other thing is early in the year, you don't need a fifth starter that often. So he's still in that utility role for the first couple of weeks of the season. He might make one start that first weekend on the road. And then, you know.
Plus starting a guy like that on the road, you don't have to be uncomfortable with anything there. I mean, there's nothing he hasn't seen. You know, you could start him in Toronto against all those righties or whatever. You'd feel fine. You wouldn't have to worry about psyche or anything. It's just you throw him out there.
I just think it was a pretty solid stealth signing, and one that they're going to be eager to see what's left.
So you invoke Castro. The one thing before I do my bullpen, I think it's going to take him a little while to mesh with these guys. And he's not going to the WBC, I believe you had reported. Not going to play with Team Mexico. That's a good move because now he can spend the extended spring training time with them. Not extended spring training, actual extended, but the lengthy spring training time learning these pitchers. I think that's going to be good, but don't expect a miracle right away in case it takes some time. I don't want to hear people saying, you know, why isn't he framing real well in the first week of April? Well, it might take some time. So I had Vogelsong in my bullpen. Here's my bullpen. I'm sure a lot of people didn't like this bullpen at all. Vogelsong was my long guy. I see what you're saying, and they could keep Haley otherwise. I have Tonkin in there, who people don't like Tonkin. Belial, Boshiers, Rogers, Presley, and Kinsler. Seven-man bullpen. It was the tough outs for me were Chegua, who I loved in September, and Duffy. I think Hildenberger and Reed are knocking on the door. Birdie could knock on the door as well. But I think it's a solid bunch in that, you know, obviously no Jepsen, no Fien, and then none of the guys that pitched a bunch of innings in September, your Wimmers, your Lights. The goal here should be to pitch like they did in July. Now, if you look at the July bullpen, I believe it was July, 15th in ERA, pretty good strikeouts, pretty good walk number. I mean, a league average bullpen would be a step forward for this bunch, just like a 20th best rotation from the bottom. Like, that's a significant jump, even if you're just a decent rotation and a pretty good bullpen. That's going to bring move the team much closer to respectability because the offense should score some runs. But people didn't like my bullpen at all. And I don't know, I can't get a read from your face right now if you're going to hate it, if you're going to chop it up, or if you're going to be riding
with me. Well, I'm just going to say I'm going to be very careful because, you know, I like those guys. I like all these guys. But I don't want to pronounce the end of the line for anybody, but you know, some people are going to get more chances than others. I guess I'd say that I expect Kinsler to be in the bullpen to start the year and to be the closer at the start. Yep. I expect Presley to have the eighth and potentially at some point this year be so good that he's given a chance to close.
I hope so, and I know so does Kat Rogers. his girlfriend is a cheerleader for the Cowboys who follows me on Twitter, and it blows my mind that she does, but it's just hilarious to me.
Well, that's the only Cowboy cheerleader who follows you?
Any Dallas Cowboys cheerleader. I never thought I'd say, again, when I was a kid, Twitter didn't exist, but hey, there's a Dallas Cowboys cheerleader following me. Yeah. I would have never dreamed saying those words in that succession.
Pretty wild. So, Taylor Rogers, too, I see, and coming back and having that chance. And then, you know, Justin Haley, we'll see what he's got before we anoint him. But mm-hmm. Chegua was quietly very good in September. He, you know, no pressure, but
he was
just mowing people down.
Yep.
And
his only bad, all of his numbers for September that are negative came in that first appearance.
Yeah.
It was like one run over, like, I think nine innings over
I think Chegua is going to come in here and be what he can be.
He's going to close. If he or Presley will close for this team at some time this year, I'm going to say.
More, you know, I'd say I put Presley a notch ahead of that because he's got a full year of doing it up here now.
Plus the double-digit whiff rates on the slider, the big fastball. Yeah. He's got what it takes.
As long as he holds up, yeah.
Yep.
You know, but beyond that, you know, it just kind of, how are they going to apportion these things? One thing I'll throw out, too, and this, you know, at some point they'll have to decide. Molitor didn't give any credence to this suggestion in late September, but, you know, they kept, we got tired of seeing poor Tyler Duffy go out there and get his head beat in, and it was always the same thing. Well, the changeup wasn't very good, and he didn't control his emotions. Okay, so you're describing to me a guy who fastball is good enough, and the curveball can put people away, and he likes to get excited. Mm-hmm. That's a setup man. That's a setup man to me. I want to see Tyler Duffy given a chance to throw the seventh.
He could be filthy out there. Like really
I think it just take the cup away from him. If the if you're not comfortable with him as a starter with a below average changeup, and you think sometimes he loses focus the second time through the lineup, let's see what happens. Tyler Duffy, you know, maybe he can be a multi inning weapon.
The new Casey Fiend getting all charged up out there.
He's got that. Let him use it. Yeah. It drives me nuts when people don't when people aren't allowed to play into their strengths. Everybody's got something,
I think they have
done that kid a disservice by harping on the things that are not his strengths when he's got clear strengths and he's got a at his best 9 starts under a pennant race pressure of 2015.
Yep.
Of getting it done.
Well, and if he throws 95 out of the pen, 96.
Tyler Duffy's a major league pitcher. It's just what role you're going to use him in.
Exactly. So my last 6 out are Jimenez, Duffy, Haley, Barrios, Chegua, and then Ryan O'Rourke we didn't mention.
Absolutely.
Buddy Beauchesne a lot, but I wasn't giving credit to Ryan O'Rourke. Big swinging strike rates on his slider, too. So I think he's got a chance. Well, now a friend. The last thing before we let you go, a friend reached out to me on Facebook today. Next year, Johan Santana is eligible for the first time for the Hall of Fame, and my friend Sam Umbert, who I played baseball with for the Metro Knights, he works at Sport Radar with me. He wants to know if we think Johan Santana is going to get into the Hall of Fame. I mean, do you get a Koufax? Does he have a Koufax like peak enough to get in? Obviously, his career was a little bit abbreviated, but he still had, you know, the 10 years required and all that good stuff.
I think he's borderline. I think that Jaws formula is going to be friendly to him, no doubt.
Because of the peak, right?
The fact that he kept trying to come back, you know, that muddies it a little bit. You know, there were some attempts to come back there with the Orioles. It had to carry him off the field with the Achilles and all that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it wasn't just like you know, he blew out and then that was it and then he didn't come back. But 50.7 career WAR, that's light. But, yeah, there was that stretch that everybody got to enjoy here.
It is only a 3-year stretch over 5, though, in a row. That's not really long enough, is it?
But, well, if you extend it to the first year with the Mets, he was still excellent there. I mean, a 7-win pitcher there. So, you know, you really, from between 03 and 08, you're talking 6 really good years there.
I probably would vote for him, but that's the bias of me.
I don't, not a first ballot guy probably, but that's going to be an interesting one to follow. But, of course, he still hasn't announced his retirement, right?
Right, and it's only 5 years since you last played, as far as I know. So, I think he wants to still pitch, but
yeah, those stories come out every year, right about this time.
What is it ifs and buts or candy and nuts?
Yeah, it would be a wonderful story if he did. He's still a young man. That's the thing. He's still not that old. But
he'll be 38 and during spring training. So
you know, if he ever got healthy, he'd come back and be a loogie and pitch till he's 45.
I'd pay to watch that.
Pretty good loogie, but. I don't have a definitive answer. I haven't made up my mind.
Haven't
on
done
that.
Your research.
I'd be looking for an excuse to vote for him.
Yeah,
but you'd have to look pretty hard.
But your initial inclination is
I don't want.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I think that's maybe. About right. It's borderline. Yeah.
Okay. Well, Sam, thank you for listening to the entire show so that we could get to the end and then answer your question. I'm not going to tell you that it's at the end of the podcast though. So. Mike, thanks for coming on. We kept you late. I appreciate that. You've been listening to Midwest Swing, part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network.